our town.
Hello, neighbors, and welcome back to Nightmare Town. We are Betty Boom.
And I'm Mandemonium.
And this week we are joined by the ever-handsome Theo.
Hello.
Who's on his phone.
I'm not.
Yeah, you are. I can see you. We actually have the whole Boom family, which is probably really cool because this season we are going to be doing the Boom season.
Yes, which we are quite excited for. We did the Moniums last season, which seems like a while ago. Now we're in the season of the Booms. Yes, it was.
Before we actually jump into anything, I want to address that because we disappeared again, unannounced, and I'm sorry.
We're sorry.
We didn't mean to. We promise we didn't. We had this whole big thing planned out. We were going to do our big Halloween special, and it was really great. We had all of this stuff planned out. It had an epic name. It was going to be called the Monster Mashup.
Yeah, we had guests, we had it in our heads, and it was going to be great. And we did it, but...
And we recorded for 2 hours, and it got corrupted, and we wound up not being able to do it. And then Manda went and recorded a backup episode with our friend TJ from the Pick Me podcast, and that was going to be our backup Halloween special. And then I got sick, and I didn't edit it, and then some other stuff happened, and then finals happened, and then it snowballed, and holidays, and then here we are.
In mid-January, but that's okay, because we're back.
We're back, baby! But we did have several friends that was joining us for the Monster Mashup, and I just wanted to say thank you so much to Kita and Sally from Hall of Sideboard Wide. I want to say thank you to Marcus, Tiny, Shazam, and Dane from Nerd It Through the Grapevine. And I want to say thank you to TJ from Pick Me Podcast because, you know, you guys took your time and did the thing with us and it just didn't happen.
But we did have a really fun time talking to you guys anyway.
Oh, it was great.
It was a great time.
It really was. It was fantastic. They're podcasts that we've talked about several times and I definitely suggest you guys go and listen to them because they're consistent where we are not. We're trying. Oi.
But we are hopefully at least entertaining enough that when we pop up, it's a nice little surprise and you're like, oh hey, I haven't heard from them in a while. We're kind of like an old friend. And we'll just pop back up periodically and be like, sup?
Yeah. And we'll just be there consistently for 7 or 8 months and we'll disappear for 2 months and it's fine.
Yeah.
We're working on it, okay? But anyway, this week we are doing...
Mysterious Objects Part 2.
And I believe Mysterious Objects was... The first one is no longer... available to the general public. I might be wrong about that.
I think that was a lost episode, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Because that was pretty early on.
It was, but we're doing it now, and it's a part two, and it's going to be great. So there's that. But, Manda, would you like to start us off?
Sure. I'm going to be talking about and I googled this beforehand, the Google how to pronounce it. Hopefully I don't butcher it, but if I do, you know what? You Greek geeks can correct me. But we're going to be talking about the anti-Kythera mechanism.
Oh.
Yeah, so this thing is quite mysterious, at least it was when it was first found, and it's still kind of mysterious to me reading about it. It has been labeled the first mechanical computer found in a shipwreck off the Greek island of Antikythera, buried under 45 meters of water. This thing was designed to calculate astronomical positions, consisting of a box with dials on the outside and a very complex assembly of gear wheels mounted within. It's about as complex as an 18th century top-notch clock.
Ooh.
The level of sophistication utilized by the device has forced scientists to accept that their perceptions of ancient Greek engineering might be faulty. Nothing similar to this exists or is mentioned in any known writings from the period of its creation. Based on the knowledge we do have, this mechanism shouldn't even exist. According to Professor Michael Edmonds of Cardiff University, who led the team studying the mechanism, he says, "This device is just extraordinary, the only thing of its kind. The design is beautiful, the astronomy is exactly right. The way the mechanisms are designed just makes your jaw drop. Whoever has done this has done it extremely carefully," he added. "In terms of historic and scarcity value, I have to regard this mechanism as being more valuable than the Mona Lisa." So judging by this thing's amazing complexity, it seems fair to assume that the Antikythera has other predecessors, but none of them have been, like, found yet,
mm-hmm.
which makes it even more impressive because it seems to be very unique, one of a kind. The complexity and workmanship did not appear again in Europe until the development of mechanical astronomical clocks in the 14th century. So how did the ancient Greeks, with basically no technology available that we know of, manage to build such a complex calculator?
Aliens. Well,
we don't know yet, no. But I'm going to say aliens, definitely aliens for sure. It's always aliens.
Thea, what do you think? Aliens?
Aliens.
Aliens.
Definitely, okay. Like, nothing else it could be.
No. Unless it's so, Bigfoot. Was it Bigfoot?
It could have been Bigfoot. It could have been, like, a mix of Bigfoot and aliens.
I mean, you know my theory honestly on that. Bigfoot is an alien.
Yeah, he is, mm-hmm. pretty much. I wanted to know more about who created this thing. Mm-hmm. And supposedly they think it's the person who also happened to invent trigonometry.
Oh, so he's a dick.
Yeah, pretty much, you know. He's a math whiz.
math.
The jerk who makes us learn trigonometry.
Exactly.
Hipparchus, I'm going to say is how his name is spelled, is pronounced.
Hipparchus. Yeah, he sounds like a dick.
Hipparchus.
But wait till you hear about Diogenes.
Who?
Oh, he's the real dick. He's like the philosopher asshole.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'll leave that for later.
All those philosopher types, you know?
Them with their stones.
With their stone computer things, apparently.
Yep.
So, yeah, Hipparchus is primarily known, like, as an ancient astronomer, though he did also apparently invent trigonometry. But anyway, he was born in what is, like, now known as Turkey around 190 BCE, and he worked and taught primarily on the island of Rhodes.
Ooh.
His works survive almost entirely through later Greek and Roman authors. So that's who supposedly made it, trigonometry bro, who was also an astronomer. And also, this thing is, like, approximately 13 centimeters in diameter. I'm always curious when I read about mysterious objects. I want to know, like, how big they are. Like, what's their size? For me, for some reason, if it's larger, it's more mysterious to me somehow. Because they discover it, and it's like, how did you guys not find this, like, large, giant thing before?
Is it, so it's bigger than a bread box?
My brain is trying to do conversions to Murica measurements.
Fuck yeah.
13 centimeters is how many Murican freedom inches?
Dude, I'm done with math. I passed both my classes. I'm never doing it again. I don't care. So,
honestly, math is one of the reasons that I haven't gone back to school yet, even though I was going to do that last year and need to do that this year because I know I'll have to take a math class and I don't want to sully my GPA with the math class. But anyway, that's all I had for my mysterious object.
He is looking it up.
Oh, yeah, look it up. You can see a picture of it. It kind of, it's round.
Hey, this looks a lot like my doorknob.
Of course it does.
Okay. Oh, okay. So it's about 6 inches.
Okay, so it's smaller than a bread box.
Okay, 6 inches. So, okay, that's good.
We'll post it on the Instagrams if I So. I say that. I'll probably forget. Someone remind me.
You know what? Honestly, I'm surprised that you manage the socials as well as you do between Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, because I, like, barely remember to put things on our Facebook, and TikTok I've been slacking on lately.
Yeah.
And I'm an old person that still doesn't really understand Twitter all that well, so.
I don't really post anything unless I see something and I'm like, oh, that's funny. And it's just like, doot. And then with Twitter, it's usually just like, thank you so much, talking to our friends. Or like, hey, go listen to our other friends. And I'm just like, I'm a dick.
We just put them back.
Yeah, these guys are awesome too. Person that liked their post, you should listen to them. A wink.
Wink, wink.
Oh, man.
We're working on ourselves. This is the year of Nightmare Town Pods. Come up and
this is our like. This is our villain origin story year.
Yes,
my hair is black. That's right. We're gonna wear fishnets and emo hair, and we're just—I don't even know where I'm going.
I've got some fake facial piercings I can throw on and join in on the emo aesthetic.
There we go. Emo aesthetic is coming back. I saw some scene kids the other day.
Man, scene's big now, and
it made me so happy.
I don't know
scared.
How to feel about it. It makes me happy, but yes, also kind of sad at the same time, because I'm like, oh, I was one of those children once, and I'm not anymore.
Okay,
I still am in my heart.
I wanted to be a scene kid so bad, but my mom wouldn't let me do that to my hair, and now looking back, I'm kind of thankful, but I'm also like, I could do it now. But I'm like, I'm a woman in my 30s.
Yeah, you can still do it.
No.
Style's just... styles for anyone. I didn't really know how to do the scene kid hair because, like, that was pre me just being like, oh, what's this thing? I'll just Google it and figure it out. I didn't just know to Google things back in the days of the mid-2000s.
It's still early so Googling days.
I never figured out how to, like, that it's mainly teasing an aquanet, basically how our moms did their hair in the 80s, but...
It's like, it's big, but
so
strict.
I just cut my hair all short. And put it in a faux hawk a lot. That was more of my punk kid look. Because I couldn't figure out the scene hair.
I had what is now called a Karen. But at the time it was called a duck butt. Or a short stack. Of multiple colors.
That's better than a Karen, for sure.
Oh yeah. It was usually fire engine red.
I liked the red in my hair, but I just, again, low maintenance kind of person, could not commit to keeping that up, so.
Okay. How did we get off on this? What? Oh, villain origin story year. That's what we're doing.
Oh, that's how we got into the scene emo kid talk. See, our segues have a purpose. They just sometimes go real into left field. But, I mean, scene kid spooky. It matches the podcast.
Exactly.
Anyway, that's enough of my mysterious object, and I would love to hear about y'all's.
Well, you guys can hear mine right after this short processing break. Oh, that was a smooth segue. Talk about segues. Boop. Hello, neighbors. Betty Boom here with a quick announcement before we get into the episode. We have merch. We have partnered with Teespring to bring you everything you could ever want with our logo on it. We have shirts, water bottles. My personal favorites are the sweatpants that say whimsically creepy down the leg, fanny packs, and so much more. If you're wanting to get your own Nightmare Town swag, head over to nightmaretown-podcast.creator-spring.com. But since that is a mouthful, you can also find a link in the episode description. Now on to the episode. And we are back from our processing break. Manda, you good to go?
Yes, had a minor setback for a second, sweated a little bit, thought I lost my recording that we just did, but it's there, just in the wrong folder, so thank goodness for that. We are... ready to hear about some more mysterious objects.
Okay, so I want to start this off with a shout out to our sister podcast, Haunt Her, I Barely Know Her, because they covered my topic back in September of 2020. It was their sixth episode ever. I know, right? But it was their sixth episode ever, and it was heckin' good. So after you listen to this episode, I recommend you go listen to that episode. There will be a link in the description below. All right, tonight I shall be covering the Dybbuk box, which was the inspiration for the 2012 film The Possession, which I tried and failed to watch last night. I really don't like scary movies. The premise of the movie is that
one. It's been a long time. Okay,
Theo had saw it too, and as soon as I started telling him about this, he was like, "Oh yeah, I like that movie." And then I was like, "What movie?" And then he was like, "That one." And then I tried watching it, and I didn't get very far. So, but the premise of the movie is that a single dad takes his daughters to a yard sale, which was happening in the fall, which I thought was weird. And his youngest daughter finds this pretty antique box that happens to house a Dybbuk. And after she figures out how to open the box, it very quickly possesses her. And that's as far as I got in the movie. In the real world, something similar happened where a guy, Kevin Manis, went to an estate sale, found a pretty antique wine chest, decided to buy it and restore it for his mom. And a lot of things happened. And then he wound up posting it on eBay. And... oh, that's our cat. Oh, by the way, we got a cat. Her name is Ziva. So if you hear meowing,
she's very cute.
That's Ziva. She is super cute. And of course, I have a laptop in my lap, and now she's all like, "Hey." But you guys know the drill. If you hear scratching, it's Bella. Now, if you hear meowing, it's Ziva. If you hear that, it's
just adds ambiance.
Yeah, cuteness. Cuteness overload here in the Boom household. But this next bit is verbatim from the website, dybbukbox.com.
Oh, there's a whole website and just devoted to this. Okay.
Yeah. So here's the story of the haunted wine box exactly as it appeared on eBay. You form your own opinion. The first buyer, an antique buyer refurnisher. All of the events that I am about to set forth in this listing are accurate and may be verified by the winning bidder with the copies of hospital records and sworn affidavits that I have included as part of the sale of the cabinet. During September of 2001, I attended an estate sale in Portland, Oregon. The items liquefied at this sale were from the estate of a woman who had passed away at the age of 103. A granddaughter of the woman told me that her grandmother had been born in Poland, where she grew up, married, raised a family, and lived until she was sent to a Nazi concentration camp during World War II. She was the only member of her family who survived the camp. Her parents, brother, a sister, husband, and two sons and a daughter were all killed. She survived the camp by escaping with some other prisoners and somehow making her way to Spain, where she lived until the end of the war. I was told that she acquired the small wine cabinet listed here in Spain, and it was one of the only three items that she brought with her when she immigrated to the United States. The other two items were a steamer trunk and a sewing box. I purchased the wine cabinet along with the sewing box and some other furniture at the estate sale. After the sale, I was approached by the woman's granddaughter, who said, "I see you got the Dybbuk box." She was referring to the wine cabinet. I asked her what a Dybbuk box was. She told me that when she was growing up, her grandmother always kept the wine cabinet in her sewing room. It was always shut and set in a place that was out of reach. The grandmother always called it the Dybbuk box. When the girl asked her grandmother what was inside, her grandmother spit three times through her fingers, said, "A Dybbuk," or... all right, I don't know how to say this word exactly. I tried looking it up, and it was not findable. So it's a kislim. And they're going to say it a few more times in here, and so I apologize if it actually is a word and I'm butchering it, but I tried, y'all.
At least you tried.
Yep. The grandmother went on to tell the girl that the wine cabinet was never, ever to be opened. The granddaughter told me that her grandmother had asked that the box be buried with her. However, as such a request was contrary to the rules of an Orthodox Jewish burial, the grandmother's request had not been honored. I asked the granddaughter what a dybbuk or keslim were. She said she didn't know. I asked if she would like to open it with me. She did not want to open it, as her grandmother had been very emphatic and serious that her instructions that when she instructed her not to do so, and regardless of the reason, she wanted to honor her grandmother's request. I finally ended up offering to let her keep what seemed to be to me a sentimental keepsake. At that point, she was very insistent and said, no, you bought it. I explained that I didn't want my money back, and that it would make me feel better to do what I thought was an act of kindness. She then became somewhat upset. Looking back now, the way she became upset was just plain odd. She raised her voice to me and said, "You bought it. You made a deal."
Oh.
When I tried to speak, she yelled, "I don't want it." She began to cry, asked me to leave, and quickly walked away. I wrote the whole episode off to the stress and grief she must be have been experiencing. I took my purchases and politely left. At the time when I bought the cabinet, I owned a small furniture refurnishing business. I took the cabinet to my store and put it in my basement workshop where I intended to refinish it and give it as a gift to my mother. I didn't think anything more about it. I opened my shop for the day and went to run some errands, leaving the young woman who did sales for me in charge. After about a half hour, I got a call on my cell phone. The call was from my salesperson. She was absolutely hysterical and screaming that someone was in my workshop breaking glass and swearing. Furthermore, the intruder had locked the iron security gates and the emergency exit and she couldn't get out. As I told her to call the police, my cell phone battery died. I hit speeds of 100 miles per hour getting back to the shop. When I arrived, I found the gates locked. I went inside and found my employee on the floor in the corner of my office, sobbing hysterically. I ran to the basement and went downstairs. At the bottom of the stairs, I was hit with an overpowering, unmistakable odor of cat urine. There had never been an animal kept or found in my shop. The lights didn't work. As I investigated, I found that the reason the lights didn't work also explained the sounds of glass breaking. All of the light bulbs in the basement were broken. All 9 incandescent bulbs had been broken in their sockets, and 10 4-foot fluorescent tubes were laying shattered on the floor. I did not find an intruder, however. I should also add that there is only one entrance to the basement. It would have been impossible for anyone to leave without meeting me head-on. I went back up to speak to my salesperson, but she had left. She never returned to work, after having been with me for 2 years. She refused to discuss the incident to this day. I never thought of relating the events of that day to anything having to do with the cabinet. Then things got worse. As I already indicated, I had decided to give the cabinet to my mother as a birthday gift. About 2 weeks after I made the purchase, I decided to get started refinishing it. I was surprised to find that the cabinet had a unique little mechanism. When you open one of the doors, the mechanism caused the opposite door and the little drawer below to open at the same time. It is very well made. Inside the cabinet, I found the following items. 1. 1928 U.S. wheat penny. 1. 1925 U.S. wheat penny. 1 small lock of blonde hair bound with string. 1 small lock of black-brown hair bound with string. 1 small granite statue engraved and gilded with Hebrew letters. I have been told that the letters spell out the word shalom. 1 dried rosebud. 1 golden wine cup. 1 very strange black cast iron candlestick holder with octopus legs. I saved all of the items in a box intended to return them to the estate. The family has refused the items, so they will be included in the sale of the cabinet. After opening the cabinet, I decided not to refinish it. I cleaned it and rubbed it with lemon oil. It was at this time that I noticed that there was an inscription in Hebrew carved in the back of the cabinet. I have no idea what it says or if it is significant. I have included a picture of that inscription below. On my mother's birthday, October 28, 2001, my mother called to tell me that she was going out of town with my sister for 3 days, and we postponed celebrating her birthday together until she returned. On October 31, 2001, my mother came to my shop. We were going to have lunch together, but before we were going to leave, I gave her the wine cabinet. She seemed to like it. While she examined it, I went to make a phone call. I hadn't been out of sight for more than 5 minutes when one of my employees came running into my office saying that something was wrong with my mom. When I went back to see what the matter was, I found my mom sitting in the chair beside the cabinet. Her face had no expression, but tears were streaming down her cheeks. No matter how I tried to get her to respond, she would not. She could not. It turned out that my mother had suffered a stroke. She was taken to the hospital by ambulance. She ended up suffering partial paralysis and losing her ability to speak and form words. She has since regained the ability to speak. She could understand things being said to her and could respond by pointing to letters of the alphabet to spell out words she wanted to say. When I asked her the following day how she was doing, she teared up and spelled out the words N-O-G-I-F-T, no gift. I assured her that I had given her a gift for her birthday, thinking that she didn't remember, but she became even more upset and spelled out the words H-A-T-E-G-I-F-T,
ooh,
hate gift. I laughed and told her not to worry. I told her I was sorry she didn't like the cabinet and that I would get her anything she wanted if she promised to get well soon. Still, I didn't associate anything that had happened with the cabinet itself or anything paranormal. Frankly, I don't think I ever even used the term paranormal until this last month. I'll try to make this short now. I gave the cabinet to my sister. She kept it for a week, then gave it back. She complained that she couldn't get the doors to stay closed and that they kept coming open. There are no springs in the door mechanism, and I have never found that the doors came open. I gave it to my brother and his wife, who kept it for 3 days and then gave it back. My brother said it smelled like jasmine flowers, while his wife insisted that it put out an odor of cat urine. Hmm. I gave it to my girlfriend, who asked me to sell it for her after only 2 days. I sold it the same day to a nice middle-aged couple. 3 days later, when I came to open the shop for the day, I found the cabinet sitting on the front doors with a note that said, "This has bad darkness."
Finally, someone says something.
They're like, yeah, no. I had no idea what that meant. Anyway, I ended up taking it home. Then things got even worse. Since the day I brought it home, I began to have a strange reoccurring nightmare. Every time I had the horrible dream, it goes somewhat like this. I find myself walking with a friend, usually someone I know well and trust. At some point in the dream, I find myself looking into the eyes of the person that I am with. It is then that I realize that there is something different, something evil looking back at me. At that point in my dream, the person I am with changes into what can only be described as the most gruesome, demonic-looking hag I have ever seen.
Ew, that gave me chills. That's so uncomfortable.
This hag proceeds then to beat the living tar out of me. I have awakened numerous times to find bruises and marks on myself where I had been hit by the old woman during the previous night. Still, I never related the nightmares to the cabinet.
Oh my God.
Nor do I think.
Sorry.
No. The next line is, nor do I think I ever would have. About a month ago, however, my sister and my brother and his wife came over to my house and spent the night. The following morning, during breakfast, my sister complained that she had had a horrible nightmare. She said that she recalled had it a couple of times before and went on to describe my nightmare exactly to the last detail. My brother and his wife froze as they listened and then chimed in that they had both had the exact same dreams during the night as well. The hair was standing up on the back of my neck and still is. As we talked, it became clear that the common denominator was that each of us had had the nightmare during the times the cabinet was in our respective homes. I called my girlfriend and asked if she had recalled having any nightmares recently. She described the same nightmare, same hag, everything. When I asked her if she remembered the date when she had had the nightmare, she said she did not. Then I asked if it had happened to be the night before she gave me the cabinet back to sell for her. She said, yeah, how did you know that? Now then, since my family discussion, it seems like all hell is breaking loose. For a week afterward, I started seeing what I could only describe as this shadowy things in my peripheral vision. In fact, numerous visitors to my house have claimed that they have seen these shadow things. I put the cabinet in an outside storage unit and was awakened when the smoke alarm in that unit went off in the middle of the night. When I went to see what was burning, I opened the door and didn't see any smoke. However, I did get hit with the smell of cat urine. When I went back inside, the smell was there in my house. I do not own a cat and I never have. I went back outside and grabbed the cabinet. I brought it back inside and tried to research it on the internet. While I was surfing the net, I fell asleep and once again had the same freaking nightmare. I woke up around 4:30 when it felt and smelled like someone was breathing on my neck, to find that my house now smelled like jasmine flowers, and just in time to see a huge shadow thing go lopping down the hallway away from me. I would destroy this thing in a second, except I really don't have any understanding of what I may or may not be dealing with. I'm afraid, and I do mean afraid, that if I destroy the cabinet, whatever it is that seems to have come with the cabinet may just stay here with me. I have been told that there are people who shop on eBay that understand these kinds of things and specifically look for these kinds of items. If you are one of these people, please, please buy this cabinet and do whatever you do with the thing like this. Help me. You can see that I have no reserve price or minimum bid. If I can make things any easier, let me know and I will do everything within my abilities. One more note. On the same day my mother had her stroke, the least of my sore was summarily terminated without cause. The measurements are 12.5 by 7.5 by 16.25. All of the items that I originally found inside the cabinet are included in the cell and will be delivered with the cabinet. On June 12, 2003, seller added the following information. There is no way that I can respond to all the emails I have received since I put this thing online. I'll try now to update and answer the most common questions I've been receiving. No, I am not religious. No, I do not wish to have or participate in any sort of exorcism or case study or photo session at my home. No, I will not sell any of the individual pieces which are originally found separate from the other pieces and the cabinet. No, I do not speak Hebrew, nor do I know what the word Kislam means. I don't know that the word is even or a Hebrew word. At the end of the auction, I have decided to take an opportunity to speak with the winning bidder for two reasons. A, to make sure that the winning bidder is a serious adult who has employed some valid reasoning skills in making the decision to accept whatever this is. I will not be judgmental. Do whatever you want or need after the sale. B, to offer full details of the events that have transpired after I have carried out those responsibilities, and upon payment, I will have the cabinet and its contents delivered by U.S. Mail, FedEx, or UPS to the winning bidder. At that point, I will have no further involvement with the matter in any way, shape, or form. Period. To all of you who have offered to pray, I may not be religious, but I am certainly open to the possibilities. No matter what your religion might be, thank you. On June 4th, 2003, seller added this following information. Here's another update for everyone following this listing. No, I will not circumvent or make any deals outside of eBay, even for more money than the final auction price. If you want to win the auction and have that kind of money some of you are offering, there shouldn't be any reason why you cannot simply place your bid in the open, honest fashion. I'm sure you can understand why I might be suspicious. Also, for those of you wanting to know if I am still experiencing anything out of the ordinary, I thought everything was going okay until I came home on Friday, the 13th of June. And found that the fish in my freshwater aquarium, all 10, were dead. I still hope that all of this is circumstantial crap. So all of that was on thedipitbox.com. And then this next bit is from an article called Finally the Truth Behind the Haunted Dybbuk Box Can Be Revealed by Charles Moss. And I'm paraphrasing it because I kind of got bored while I wasn't bored, but I was trying to get all of the information in without, like, I felt like the last bit was a lot. So I was trying to slim it down some. So after the eBay posting, the Dybbuk box was sold, and then even more stories came out about it. The next owner, Jason Haxton, bought the box for $280 and then wrote a book off of his experiences. Everything from bleeding eyes to random choking attacks to, yes, recurring dreams of a creepy old woman in the first few months after buying the box. Both Mantis, the original owner of the box, and Haxton worked as production consultants for The Possession. In an Entertainment Weekly article published around the time of the movie's release, director Ole Bordello claims that really weird things happened during production. He describes standing underneath an unlit neon light that randomly exploded and says that 5 days after shooting Wrapped, all the props from the film were destroyed in a mysterious fire.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Later in 2016, Haxton sold the box to none other than Zach Bagans from Ghost Adventures for a sum neither party is willing to reveal. Zach Bagelbites then moved the box to his haunted museum in Las Vegas, where it quickly was dubbed the world's most haunted object. Then in 2020, Bagelbites not only opened the box and claimed that he heard a voice that said Kevin, referring to Manus, and evil, then heard a child's voice. The show captured on camera what Bagans and his crew claimed was a figure that manifested inside the box. And the highlight of the episode, however, at least from the media standpoint, was security camera footage of Bagans and his friend, the musician Post Malone, touching the closed Dybbuk box prior to Bagans opening it, which is something Post Malone has went on to talk to you about in interviews. Sadly, though, this all seems to be a hoax. In a 2019 column, Skeptical Inquirer magazine writer Kenny Biddle posted a screenshot of a Facebook post Manus made on October 24th, 2015. I am the original creator of the story of the Dybbuk box, which appeared in one of my eBay posts back in 2003. The idea that Dybbuk boxes have some kind of history prior to my story, and the idea that a Dybbuk box could contain anything other than a Dybbuk, along with any deviation to the type of contents I created to be found inside of the Dybbuk box, is laughable at best. How about this? If you or anyone else can find any reference to Dybbuk box anywhere in history prior to my eBay post, I'll pay you $100,000 and tattoo your name on my forehead. So Moss was able, the writer of this article, he was able to find Manus, the original owner, and was able to get him to open up about the box, and this was their conversation. And that's when he tells me everything he wrote in his 2003 eBay listing is a work of fiction. I'm a creative writer, he says. The Dybbuk box is a story that I created, and the Dybbuk box story has done exactly what I intended it to do when I posted it 20 years ago. Which is what, I ask him. Which is to become an interactive horror story in real time, he says. Though Manus did buy the wine cabinet at a yard sale, it was from an attorney, not the granddaughter of a Holocaust survivor. The carving in the back of it is my carving, he says. The stone that was in the box is something that is a signature creation of mine also. Make no mistake, I conceived the Dybbuk box, the name, the term, the idea, and wrote this creative story around it to post on eBay. And that's the story of the Dybbuk box. The end.
The only time... So, I had heard of that before. I actually didn't know the whole thing was, a hoax or whatever. But I do remember the first time I heard the word Dybbuk was an episode of The Rugrats. It was one of the ones... It may have been one of the specials. But they were at their... Tommy and Co. was at his... grandparents' house, who were, Jewish, and they were all in the attic, and I think the attic got, they got stuck in there or something, I can't remember, but the grandpa was, telling them some story, but then, scary things ensue for the Rugrats, and they were like, don't let the Dybbuk get you, the Dybbuk's gonna get you, or something. I think the grandpa said that, before they went to bed, don't let the Dybbuk bite, or something, so that's kind of funny that that's horrible. Worked its way into, at the time, pop culture from that stemming, I guess, from that story. That's interesting.
I think it'd have to be.
It's very mysterious.
But this week, my sources are Haunter, I Barely Know Her, Episode 6, TheDybbukBox.com, and InputMagazine.com. So that's that on that.
Well, that was quite a riveting tale. That was... gave me goosebumps a few times. It doesn't help. I'm literally sitting right next to a very mysterious looking box that I found at Goodwill one time that I don't know what it's for or what it was used for, but it's my decoration now.
I need some wine
after that
Well, at the very end, all the research I did got thrown out the window.
Why? You did research?
No, yeah. Usually when I hear somebody's been hallucinating or anything like that, I'm a cognitive therapist. So I think about all the reasons why somebody would be hallucinating.
Carbon monoxide poisoning.
Yeah. So that was one of the things I was thinking of. But so a Dybbuk box. The two smells that they were talking about were ammonia and... jasmine. Jasmine smells a lot like ammonia, so they both smell like cactus.
Oh, I didn't know jasmine smelled like ammonia.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So if you have ammonia that is poisonous and in gas form, it can kind of get into your blood. It's one of the few chemicals that can, like, cross that blood-brain barrier. A lot of medications, like things that help with dopamine and stuff, you can't cross that blood-brain barrier. That's why it's so hard to do a lot of psych meds. So ammonia will cause, like, a lot of... It causes a lot of the symptoms that they were talking about there. Oh, where'd you go? Okay. So, for instance, it causes irritability. It causes combativeness. It can cause a lot of, like, tonic and clonic seizures. So they'll start, like, moving. Well, you can't really see me on a podcast, can you? But, like, just, like, twitching and then akesthesia and all that stuff. And
what's akesthesia?
Like,
muscle spasms.
Yeah.
Okay, like a stroke.
Yeah. And so it can do a lot of those things.
Wow.
To a certain extent, it can also cause a lot of nightmares. And it can, like, the part that would explain, like, the old hag has a lot to do with sleep deprivation.
My brain went to DMT because people talk about the DMT hag lady when they're tripping DMT.
Ah, okay. So probably that also works on sleep cycles being out of whack. So when you go to sleep, there's actually two phases or two different mechanisms going on. Your body goes to sleep and your mind goes to sleep. So they usually are in sync. If one goes to sleep before the other one, you get problems. And those are usually brought on by the sleep deprivation. So for instance, if your body wakes up before your mind does, that's a lot of the sleepwalking that we're seeing. The other end of that is sleep paralysis. That's when you wake up and you feel like some old hag is sitting
sleep
on your chest. That's actually
demon.
What they talk about. Yeah, hag syndrome.
Her name is Lilith, and we respect her.
Yeah, and also the other parts that you were talking about where, like, somebody was kind of whispering behind you. That is the other very specific symptom that they have with sleep deprivation. So, like, generally when I'm talking with somebody who says that they have psychosis, I ask them if it happens, like, around the time of bedtime. I ask them if it feels like there's somebody in the room with them and if they can see them or if they're, like, right outside their vision. So it usually happens right outside the periphery. And so you can really tell if somebody actually has schizophrenia or just sleep deprivation just from that. But all of those are symptoms of the ammonia poisoning. How they were getting the ammonia poisoning is back in the early 1900s, there was a Jewish chemist. He did a lot of bad gases. Like, it was used in warfare. So,
yeah.
Like, the ammonia gas the mustard gas that was used in World War I and stuff. But
Agent Orange?
No.
I believe
that one was Vietnam, but
yeah,
again,
that was Vietnam.
Was not.
Okay. Yeah, mustard gas was
gas
the one
chambers thing. In the Holocaust,
yeah.
Right?
Mm.
Zycon B or something like that. But I believe that was also attributed to him. But also ammonia was used a lot for something called ammonia fuming. Ammonia fuming was a way of darkening wood, and it needed a hooded box to be in. And so if you see the movie, you have a really dark box, and then you have all these little wooden objects on the inside.
The movie The Possession.
Yeah, and... Oh, yeah, sorry. And then the box is, like, tightly sealed. You can't really get into it because you really don't want ammonia gases to be, like, being released. And so the way that they do this ammonia fuming is they take the items, they'll place it in the box, and then they take a damp rag, soak it with ammonia hydrate, and they put it in there, and you're supposed to leave it in there for 72 hours. And that will darken the wood. So the reason why they probably have the wooden objects was because they're trying to treat it. And, like, I think some of the items within that box were just kind of, like, tattered cloth and stuff, which could have...
There was also hair. A cloth in there. Oh, yeah. A ring.
Well, you know, they could... I think they also did... I could be very wrong. I think they also did something to do with, like, some kind of treatment of metal as well.
I don't know. I only watched, like, 20 minutes of the film.
So. Oh, okay. Well, I only did, like, 5 minutes of research. But, like, so I was thinking about all those things. It's like, okay, so that all kind of makes sense. You know, I don't know why somebody would want to go and do ammonia fuming on the inside of a house when you've got all of the outside. Other than the fact that you probably want to do it inside because there are two forms of that ammonia. There's anhydrous and there's hydrous. So, depending on the moisture content, like, the more moisture content, I think that's when it actually becomes poisonous. So, some people, they try to treat, like, dishes with this ammonia. But when you wash them, that's when it becomes not palatable. But, yeah, that's what I was thinking, but all that's thrown out the window because this is all fake, so.
Well, it's still fascinating. You could really have your own podcast, yeah. Just, like, chatting about random cognitive things because it's quite fascinating.
I know, right? We've talked about it. I'm like, we have the setup, just do it.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, how did you get famous? Oh, you know, I was talking about poisoning little kids with ammonia.
No one said little kids. You threw that in yourself.
Okay.
Also, this is our relationship. I'm all like, demons. And he was like, actually.
Science.
Let me whimsy. Science-splain it to you.
Don't you science-splain that to me. I want my whimsy. Well, guys, I do believe that is all we have for mysterious objects, unless, Theo, do you have anything you want to...
No, I don't want to ruin anybody else's day.
I didn't ruin that. I just found that fascinating.
If that were a real thing, your explaining it away would have made me feel a lot better.
Exactly. Because I would have been like,
this is logical.
Until you cover in detail the body decomposition timeline, you're fine. I did that too, Halloween.
I was
gonna
say, but you did that already, but
it's fine. You're good.
Which was also fascinating.
But... Exactly. Science.
Science.
But anyway, Amanda, do you want to choose our next episode?
Yes, I'm going to close my eyes and point to it on my phone here. We have got All Choked Up, sent in by Betty's Aunt Rhonda.
Aunt Rhonda! I will have to let her
know. I love the name of that one, so stay tuned for that!
I mean, I might have an upper leg here because all the ones that she sent in, she did send in research suggestions.
All right!
And I was like, don't tell me what to research. I'll probably do that just because I feel like I need to because you put in a lot of thought into it. And I was very appreciative. And thank you, Aunt Rhonda. But anyway, if you guys have your own stories to tell or ideas for the hat, because we will need ideas after we're done with the boom season, you can hit us up at nightmaretown18@gmail.com, over on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok. Amanda covers that one. You can also go over to our website, which is nightmaretownpodcast.com. Which our lovely Theo that is here with us today was the one who designed that, and it's super ballin'. And it looks really cool.
Come see my podcast.
We've also got a
podcast?
No.
Well, when you have a podcast one day, we'll have it up there.
Yeah.
We've also got a Linktree link
to the list of things I do
floating around that'll send you to just all of those things. If you don't feel like looking them up yourself. We have that link on all the things, I think.
Well, those are so neat.
I love it.
I always forget about them, and Amanda works so hard to make it, and it's just awesome. Oh, also, we have merch that I totally forget about. So we have that.
Also on the link
It's over on Teespring.
On Teespring.
Yeah.
which you can access via the Linktree if you can't find it on Teespring, but yes.
So yeah, go buy our merch and do that stuff. And if you wanted to, you know, throw us some money, we also have a Patreon, which is also on our Linktree. Bella Scratch, and she's cute. But anyway.
Until next time.
Tell us a story. Bye.
Bye.